Thank you for joining us for this chapel message from the campus of Columbia International University in Columbia, South Carolina. Our mission at CIU is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ.
I'll tell you, after that introduction, even I'm excited about to hear what I'm going to say. Yeah, it'll be fun. This is a real honor for me to be here. I know you don't care about me, and I'm okay with that. But you guys are excited to be here, and I'm excited for you as well. When I was first asked to speak a few months ago, I was so excited, I called my mom, and I said, "Mom, you're not going to believe this. I've been invited to speak at the commencement of Columbia International University." And my mom thought for a second, and she said, "Well, keep it short." I was like, she was touched, I could tell. Well, seriously, the topic we're going to talk about here is a topic that for me, going into professional ministry, and you, regardless of whether you're going to professional ministry or you're going to be a ministering professional, this is an important message because I think it's at the heart of what Christ wants for those of us that serve him in this world. On the final night of his life here on earth, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world and to return to the Father, Jesus actually held a commencement service for his disciples. They had spent years with the master teacher, and now it was time for graduation. But instead of handing out degrees, Jesus gave them something different. He gave them this. You know what this is? Now, before you answer, I should say, for many of you, your mothers are sitting far too close to you right now. You need to know what this is, right? With this instrument, you clean the most foul yet precious porcelain convenience in your home. Now, for most of you, your mothers did this for you for years. And if you've been living on campus, it's very likely that a custodial engineer has been performing this service for you. But it would be a shame to think that you have come to this graduation where you will be leaving this wonderful institution and you have no working knowledge of this instrument. Especially because it is a model of exactly what Jesus intended to teach his disciples. Now, I know you've taken Bible classes, and you're probably thinking, "I don't remember the toilet brush parable." It's okay, it's in there, but you just have to be a little creative. The disciples had walked with Jesus. They had been trained by Jesus. But as Jesus surveyed them on that fateful night, he knew that there was a key aspect of their training that was still underdeveloped. And this comes from John chapter 13, beginning in verse 3. I'll read it for us. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper, laid aside his outer garments, and taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" And Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "Well, you should never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Well, Simon Peter said to him, "Well, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." And Jesus said, "The one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you. For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, 'Not all of you are clean.'" When he'd washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, Blessed are you if you do them. Now, washing the feet was servants' work. These first century disciples were walking through city streets among numerous people and animals and very poor sanitation. Now, your feet, besides being naturally sweaty and smelly, were stepping in, through, and around all sorts of unmentionables. It was only common decency that rather than walk with those sandals into the heart of someone's home, you would pause by the front door, remove your sandals, and allow a servant, a lowly servant, to wash the filth from your feet. Now, I wonder if before this evening meal with Jesus, if the disciples would have washed one another's feet. Now, I'm sure they would have washed Jesus' feet. I mean, Jesus is, you know, he's the Lord of the universe. But would they have washed one another's feet? I don't know. That's not something peers do for one another. That's servant's work. And here's Jesus actually dressing the part, taking off his outer garments. I mean, Jesus perhaps bare-chested with a towel wrapped around him, going one by one to the disciples and washing their feet. How undignified for the King of the universe. That would be like Jesus visiting your house and spending time with you, and you are elated that the King of the universe is spending time with you, and then he excuses himself because he says he needs to use your restroom. And you're like, well, no, I haven't had a chance to clean. Don't go in there yet. I'm a college student. So you pull up from where you are, and you run to go get in front of him, and it's too late. He's already taken off his outer shirt. He stands there in his T-shirt, and he's looking for your toilet brush. And you're fighting him on this, but he fights through it, and he does it anyway. He cleans your toilet. How humiliating would that be? And what is perhaps most humiliating is that you wouldn't do for almost anyone else what the Lord of all creation would do for you. Now, as is common with Jesus, there's often more than one meaning behind what he is saying and what he's doing. And in the context of cleansing here in John 13, there are several things going on. So if you were to go to verse 10 and you were reading this, it says here, "The one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." Now, in this context, there are several things going on. One is basic hygiene. You know, quite frankly, your feet stink. They need to be washed. But second, though, is the idea of the atonement, that Jesus would be the one who would make us clean. And then finally, there's probably some other element of this ongoing need for cleanliness. The idea of continuing to wash the feet, spiritually speaking, is probably a reference to our sanctification journey, where we keep coming back to the Lord, asking for forgiveness. It reminds me of what John, the author of this gospel, wrote in 1 John 1:9, that if we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. And what do we make of the idea that Jesus actually washed the feet of Judas Iscariot? I mean, we can kind of get the disciples, right? But Judas Iscariot? He's the one who would betray Jesus. He's the unredeemed. And yet Jesus paused to wash his feet. Well, what's going on here? Fortunately, Jesus explained to us what I already read for you, exactly what's going on. "You call me teacher and Lord. You're right. I am. And if I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly." And you know when Jesus repeats, he's trying to say this is important. "Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." Now, there's a danger with almost any kind of training, and that danger is that you begin to think more highly of yourself than you ought to think. Now, I remember going to do my undergraduate degree at Appalachian State, and when I went up there, my dad gave me some great advice. He said, "Listen, you just need to get in and get out in 4 years. That's it. Nobody is going to ask you for your GPA when you apply for a job." So I took Dad to heart on that and barely escaped Appalachian State, but I did graduate. Don't ask about my GPA. But it's funny. It reminds me of the statement that was made to some individuals who are leaders in higher education. And this gentleman said to them, "You know, you should always be nice to your A students because one day one of them might come back and be a professor for you. But you should also always be nice to your C students, because one day one of them may come back and donate $2 million. It's not all about the GPA, right? Yeah, that's funny. So after that, I went, I came to CIU, and I came to CIU because I wanted to get kind of a higher education degree. I came here for my Master of Divinity degree, and I can't help but think, what an interesting name that is, the Master of Divinity. Yes, I am a Master of the Divine. Ask me your questions, I shall answer. That's what I am, a Master of the Divine. Then I came back, I thought, you know, well, let me get my doctorate. So I got my Doctor of Ministry degree. Now you'd think I'd really know something. No, the only thing I know is how much there is to know, and I don't know that. That's what I know. I've also learned that a degree just doesn't make you anything. After seminary, I had my MDiv in my hand, and I became a church planter. Now, you know what a church planter is, right? That's senior pastor of a church with no people. That's what I became. I led no one, but I led them well. As a Christian, you're defined by your Christian character, not your outer achievements. And if you think of yourself as a servant, as Jesus intended, then you might make a good leader. But if you think of yourself as a leader, you may not be a very good servant. And Jesus wants us to be good servants. The Lord has used this passage in my life in a number of ways, in various vocations and now in professional ministry. And I realize that Jesus wants me to stay humble. And as you enter the workforce, whether you are a professional minister or a ministering professional, the quality of your character will quickly be revealed. And it will either undergird your Christian testimony or it will undercut it. And the Lord has offered you a formula. He has offered you this. If you want to be successful in the eyes of the Lord, and to be fair, if you want to be considered successful in this world, you need to set yourself apart from the way of this world. You need to learn how to serve. Always be willing to take the dirty job. Always be willing to do the grunt work. Be willing to wash the feet of Judas Iscariot. At our church, I've tested various interns that have come and asked to work with us. Years ago, we were still setting up and tearing down in schools, and this young man was graduating seminary, and he came to me and said, you know, I'd like to do an internship at Sand Hills Community Church. And I said, okay. I said, well, here's what we need. And he said, well, okay, wait. I would like to volunteer to be a Bible teacher for you. I was like, really? I said, well, okay, you know what? We don't need a Bible teacher right now. You know what we need? Is we need somebody that will show up early on Sunday mornings and put out chairs and then stay after the service and put all of those away. Would you be willing to do that? He said, yeah, I don't think I really want to do that. But if you need a Bible teacher, just let me know. Now, he didn't know, but I was doing John 13 on him because this was my thought. If this guy would be willing to take a lowly position, then he would probably be a great leader. But he had not yet learned that lesson, so I couldn't release him to that opportunity. And it wasn't just he that's had to learn that. The Lord has taught this lesson to me numerous times over and over. So you've been in Columbia for the past few years, right? The Columbia summers, aren't they beautiful? That's a whole new world here, yeah? I mean, the great thing about Columbia is in the middle of summer, you can wake up first thing in the morning and you're already miserable. That's a beautiful thing. So some years ago, we were starting a church, and we're setting up, we're tearing down, and it was already one of those miserable Columbia mornings, and we're approaching mid-morning, and as we're setting up inside the school, I realized that we hadn't hung our banner outside to announce this is where our church meets, and it was a normal thing that we do, but it's pretty complex, and you have to be up on a ladder in the full sun for a period of time, and so I asked a volunteer. I said, would you be willing to go out and put that banner up for us? And the volunteer said, I will, but I can't do it right now. I'll have to come back and do it later. And as they walked away, it was almost like the voice of the Lord saying to me, did you just ask someone to do something that you're unwilling to do yourself? So I paused. It's like, yes, I did. Let me do this. So I got a ladder. I went out, and I hung the sign. And I came back in looking like I'd just taken a shower with my clothes on. But it was one of those lessons that I needed to learn, and the Lord has taught it to me over and over again. Because in my position, it would be easy to get a big head. You know, people call me now senior pastor. What does that mean? Well, I know what Jesus thinks it means. Senior servant. I need to be the one willing to do anything that anyone else would do. You're headed into a workforce that has begun to lose faith in this generation of graduates. You'll have no shortage of peers that are willing to get full pay for a job they only want to half do. But if you'll adopt the attitude of your teacher and your Lord, you'll not only be living out what you say you believe, but you will very likely be entrusted with greater responsibility, both by the Lord and your employer. Be careful, though, because if you pursue humility because you think it will lead to promotion, then you've just backed into pride. We don't want that. But if you do it because of verse 17, and verse 17, let me just revisit it again because I love verse 17. Verse 17 of John 13 says this, "If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. If you will serve others because you are greedy for the blessing of the Lord, that's a great motivation." That's what Jesus intended for us. You know, my regret this morning, though, is that I didn't order a case of these to give out to each of you as you received your degree today. That would have been really cool. In fact, what I think would be really neat is maybe you could help me with this. You can go buy one. And then what you can do is when you hang your diploma on your wall, you could hang one of these next to it. And when somebody looks at those and they're like, why do you have the toilet brush next to your degree? You can say, well, this is to remind me that in the eyes of my Lord Jesus, they're the same in value. Thank you.
We hope you found this message a blessing to your life. More Columbia International University Chapel messages are available at iTunes and at podcast.ciu.edu. Learn more about CIU's undergraduate, seminary, and graduate programs at our website, ciu.edu. Columbia International University educates people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for the opportunity to minister to you today.